here to give us a local perspective about what goes into organizing and the sacrifices that are sometimes needed personally to get the work done is Johanna Bencomo. She is director of community organizing with NM Cafe, a faith-based community organizing group here in Las Cruces. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
I have a couple of personal questions for you that I'd like to ask. Why organizing? What was it that drew you to this type of work?
So I'm originally from Chihuahua, Mexico, a tiny, tiny little town in Chihuahua. And my family and I migrated to the United States when I was 8 years old. And I start there because I feel like these experiences, the immigrant experience, I was undocumented for 8 years. I lived in a predominantly white community in northeastern Colorado, which, you know, for a young person who doesn't speak any English, and that can be quite the experience. And so I feel like all of that sort of my experiences growing up led for me to become sort of an individual that just really had like a lot of fight in her and was kind of angry about a lot of things growing up and realizing that things were just kind of unfair for a lot of people and wanting to do something about it. And 4 years ago, I happened to find New Mexico Cafe while I was getting my master's in social work. And I had no idea what community organizing was before then. But I found Cafe and I realized that there was this vehicle that was community organizing that put our stories at the center, and organizing gets to say, actually, you as a person in this community get to have a say in the way that we get to live our lives and that we get to empower ourselves and our communities. And so much of that led to me becoming an organizer. And honestly, I've told people that I've never felt more aligned with my life's purpose than in this work.
Can you recall like a specific moment or a movement that you were a part of that where you were like, this is where I'm supposed to be?
In 2013, there was the closest we'd gotten in the United States to giving millions of immigrants a pathway to citizenship. And I have a lot of my family members don't have the privilege that I do of being a naturalized American citizen. And it was that moment that I just felt so frustrated with the system and so frustrated that we weren't making progress and that voices and families were getting ignored and because of that, detained and deported and separated, right? And I really wanted to do something for my community. I've always identified as an immigrant, and for me, it was always really important to work for my immigrant community, and I had no idea how I was going to do that, which is why I got into social work and you know, not realizing that community organizing was out there. And when I found Cafe, I don't know that it was one particular thing. It was a series of things, but one of them was being able to share my story and having people respond in a way that was, you know, powerful in that my story meant something, right? And sharing that with other people who had similar stories, that meant something. So it was like really several things that happened that really got me to where I am today.
You brought up the push for what has been called comprehensive immigration reform. You currently are doing work with DACA recipients to find a solution there, Dreamers as well. And advocates like yourself have been pushing for years to get what you call a Clean Dream Act. Yeah. This work has been going on for a long time.
Decade.
And Dreamers, DACA recipients, people who are directly impacted by this issue have been sharing their stories for many years in front of Senate committee hearings, congressional hearings at, you know, every different type of level, federal, state. And I wonder, does it get frustrating or perhaps even just simply exhausting for you and a lot of the people that you work with that are involved with this type of work?
Yeah, in the work I've been doing last year with Dreamers, specifically Border Dreamers, and developing them and training them to powerfully share their stories to the highest of governance and to fight for something better always, that fight can actually get really exhausting. And I'm in really deep relationship with a lot of Dreamers in our community who have told me, you know, that they want to share their stories, that they want to make their opinions and the way they feel about a Clean Dream Act known, right? Because it really matters what they have to say about this, right? And many of them, when you talk to them, will always talk about their families first. And so they don't want to see something pass that criminalizes their parents, right? But through all of that, I think it leads to a lot of fatigue and exhaustion. And, you know, dreamers at this point are feeling like are stuck in between a, what is it,
rock and a hard place. Yeah.
Because they want to share their stories. They want to talk about their experiences. And they're scared, right? Like, we are seeing this administration come down really, really hard on undocumented immigrants, on activists that are doing this in the work for various different reasons. So people that want to speak out are really are scared because they see the value and the power in doing so, and are also really scared that there's going to be retaliation, you know, and that takes quite a bit of a toll on you.
Another reason why I bring this up, though, is we've seen a number of movements unfold over the last few years.
Yeah.
And we've seen many activists actually pass away from health-related causes.
Suicide.
There's a lot going on there. You know, as somebody who's on the ground level organizing and seeing how much sacrifice goes in with people, I mean, is this something that you talk about with your organization and also with people who are involved with the movements that you're a part of?
Yes, we make sure to talk amongst our cafe staff and our leaders. We make sure to talk about self-care quite often. And honestly, like in our movement as a whole, I feel like we talk about self-care quite a bit. And sometimes it's kind of just lip service. And we don't have necessarily the resources to do really meaningful self-care, like trauma-informed self-care. At the end of the day, the things we are seeing, seeing families get separated through deportation, seeing families being separated because their kids are getting shot out in the streets, right? Like, loss is loss, and all of that lands as trauma, even if it didn't happen directly to you, if you're organizing on the ground with people that are being directly affected, or if you are directly affected and are organizing. There's such a huge piece that I feel like is traumatizing for communities, and sometimes we don't really have the resources to be able to really meaningfully take care of ourselves, right? And practice really powerful and good self-care, which is why you see activists across the country just really suffering, and a lot of times in private, right? If we are speaking out for ourselves and our families, and we often have to be that really strong voice, right? And not realizing that behind the scenes, things can get really complicated, and heartache can take a toll on you. And I think we can see that happening.
Besides the trauma, I mean, there's some serious stress there. You have a lot of activists who are volunteers,
yeah,
and
that's right,
you know, take time away from their jobs, or maybe are not able to hold a job because they're spending so much time and dedication to what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, which could be like, say, financial stress. They may be struggling to keep a roof over their head, but still feel that the work is important to them.
Absolutely.
Is that something you've seen through your work?
Oh my gosh, all the time. I mean, when I think about the young people that I organize with, especially the dreamers who have sometimes two jobs, who are going to school, who are teachers, who are firefighters, who are really investing in themselves and in their future and in our community while still being committed to this fight for their own liberation, this fight for their people, so that their people can eventually find a way to become citizens in this country and to not live every day with fear of being deported. And for them, that fear is still there, right? DACA recipients aren't necessarily even safe. So there's like all these layers of stress, and the way I see these young people handle themselves is honestly incredibly powerful and brave. And I talked to this group about how are we really taking care of ourselves and each other, because that's just becoming more and more valuable and needed in the moment we're in.
Being involved in something like this, you do spend a lot of time away from your family and your loved ones. You may be traveling on a regular basis or dedicating a lot of time to whatever movement or cause you have. How do you find that balance between the personal life and the work?
It is so necessary, and it's a tough lesson I learned early on in my organizing career, where I was spending long days out in the field and coming home really late, and My family lives in Colorado, so, you know, making really intentional time to go visit them a couple times a year. But family is why we do this work, right? And so not spending time with them would be sort of counterproductive because we know that they're the thing that keeps us going. It's really funny, though. When I first started organizing, for example, like in Vado, I would be out there late evenings, right, because people work during the day. And so for me to meet with them and have meaningful conversations about the work we want to do, I would be in their houses on their kitchen tables till like 8:30, and often people would ask me, "Do you not have to go home soon? Like, and is no one waiting for you at home?" Like, I can't even tell you how many times I've been fed by community members in their houses because they're so generous and welcoming, and or how many times they send me home with food, right? And the beautiful thing about organizing the way that we organize is that we're not building transactional relationships. We're building really transformational relationships with people that become an extension of our family, right? And we are fighting the hard fight. And if we're not in relationship with each other like this, you know, the word would be even harder. And I can't even imagine that. So I think there's a balance to all of it. And we're trying to build this beloved community where we can all be sort of like family.
Is it possible, really, for somebody to be so dedicated to movements? It takes a lot of time. You lose a lot of sleep, and you're always stressed about things like perhaps finances or different legal issues, maybe, or logistics, which we haven't even talked about. Is there like a shelf life to this job?
Unfortunately, there is, and I feel like that's something our movement really has to figure out. Because there's such high burnout rates, because of all the things we've just talked about, the stress, external influences, the opposition, organizing sometimes is slow moving work, right? Like we don't see results from one day to another, like it takes time. And so, we have really high burnout rates. And I think now that we have professionalized community organizing that many organizations really have to look at the way that we treat our employees and the way that we are treating and handling the care of community organizers and making sure that people are making good wages while they're out there organizing for good wages, right? That we are having competitive wages and that we're providing people with the resources that they need to be able to do this work in a sustainable manner. And really, it's the beautiful thing about the movement is that so many people are in the movement not as professional organizers, right? Because they're invested to liberation and they're committed to making sure we bring change to our communities. And so we really have to figure out a way to make sure that these people are getting the resources they need in a timely manner so that there isn't such high burnout rate.
You came aboard as a full-time employee of CAFE after the organization successfully organized a campaign to increase the minimum wage in Las Cruces. What were some of the things that the organization was going through after that? I mean, did you have to like also work on rebuilding, you know, relationships within the community for other things you may be interested in working on together?
Yeah, when I came on board and as a full-time employee in 2015, the campaign had just ended and it was a really powerful and hard campaign, right? When I talked to my colleagues, the amount of self-care that they had to do and the amount of care that they had to take for themselves because the campaign, had a pretty ugly turn to it eventually. And even though it was successful and we got an increase for 18,000 Las Cruces, right, it took a toll on the organizers and the leaders leading the work and the clergy. And when I came on board, we took 2015 to rebuild and build new relationships out in the community. For me, for example, I really focused on building relationships with people out in the county and started having different conversations around what people out there needed in terms of infrastructure and things like that. But just in general, though, I think we took a pretty long year to do a lot of listening as well on how we could improve our organizing work and make sure that people felt more included in the process and that people were feeling like they were having a say in the progress our community was making.
One of the things that you do is you work with a lot of younger people. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're seeing a movement of young people leading an effort for potential gun legislation across the country. What are some of the things that you've noticed, you know, as somebody in your position as an organizer, that the next generation is doing that, maybe some things that you see that they're doing right, and some, if you could give advice to the next generation of organizers, what would you tell them?
Something I've noticed about this particular movement that these young people out of Florida are helping lead is that they are incredibly aware of the privilege that they've had in getting as much attention in this movement as they've had compared to, for example, young activists and people trying to lead their communities that are people of color, right? Young people of color who have been trying to get attention to issues of police excessive force and mass shootings and like the Black Lives Matter movement and Dreamers, right? Who have been really saying, look at us, listen to us, right? Not necessarily specifically about gun violence, but also about gun violence and bigger things. And the beautiful thing that I saw these young people do was use their platform and their privilege to give voice to the young kids of Chicago, to give voice to the young people of Los Angeles, to give voice to the people of Baltimore who've been experiencing these issues for a really long time. And so something that I see in this younger generation that gives me a lot of hope is I don't even think they have to think about inclusivity. I think that's just like in their bones. For this younger generation, it's so important to have multiple powerful voices at the table making decisions. And I mean, if I were to give them any advice is to stay true to that and to build powerful relationships across cultures, across class, across race and issue, and truly, truly build a movement that is not based in silos, and build a movement that is truly towards, you know, liberation and equity and justice for all people.
One of the other things I've heard this new generation of organizers speak up about is they made sure to bring to point that they're going to be voting soon.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked with registering voters. What do you think that type of a rhetoric or them putting it out there like that, how does that impact people in our community in New Mexico when it comes to registering voters? I mean, do you think it can have like a positive impact on that?
Absolutely. One of my favorite things to do actually is register voters. And I know a lot of people don't like it, but I love registering new people to vote. I love knocking on doors and getting people, encouraging people to go out to vote. And for CAFE, we do one of the largest nonpartisan civic engagement campaigns in southern New Mexico, which means that we talk to voters about just going out to vote, about voting your values at the ballot. We don't talk to them about candidates, right? We talk to them about values and issues and what's at stake and why they should go out to vote. Because voting and elections aren't the solution. They are a tool. They are another vehicle in it for us to bring change, right? And in the last 2 years, we've seen that elections have consequences, really real consequences. And if people are sitting it out, we are allowing people to represent us that don't actually represent us and our values, right? And so for these young people to be pushing a huge voter registration drive, which is really powerful, and I hope that people in New Mexico and in our community really see the importance of that. And even though, like, people are frustrated and with the system and feel disenfranchised and feel like there's this thing people always say in Spanish that's like, ya pa que? Like, for what, right? And the reality is that we have a lot at stake. From our city council, from our county commission, we have a sheriff's race this year. We have a congressional race this year. We have a governor's race, right? Like, all politics are local. And if you might be, like, really frustrated with what's happening at the federal level, but I hope people start really realizing how important it is for us to make our voices heard at the ballot during election season, especially locally.
Yohana Bencomo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Talking about your perspective and what it's like being an organizer here in our part of New Mexico. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.